We'll begin in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. For the first week of March 2006, this is the Rain Report, alive just barely on the internet on rainreport.com. I'm Blair Alper, KA9SEQ. Our apology to those who attempted to stream last week's rerun on risk-taking from 1989. Due to some software upgrades, the audio server was down for the last part of the week. That program should be available for the balance of this week, however, as last week's program. This is assuming the software upgrade has been completed. Question: when did you discover the VHF ham bands, those above 10 meters? Rain's founder-producer, Hap Holly, KC9RP, made his first 2-meter contact in the late 70s. Yours truly did it in 1984. CQ Magazine VHF columnist and CQ VHF Magazine editor Joe Lynch, N6CL, began dabbling on those bands more than 4 decades ago.
Back in the 1960s when I started, VHF consisted mainly of AM, CW, and a bit of ATV. Things were beginning to happen. The first EME contact took place in 1960. 6 meters was pretty much a sporadic E operation, but in the late 1950s, during the International Geophysical Union years of 1957 to 59, F2 was involved. Also, specialized authorization allowed some countries to be able to get on the air. Then DXCC was something that was thought to be unreachable because there weren't even 50 countries active on the air. So the 6-meter International Radio Club, SMIRC as it was known, issued an award for a 1/2 DXCC. Now over 700 ham radio operators have achieved a DXCC on 6 meters. Back in the 1960s, novices had 2-meter privileges from 145 to 147 megahertz, and technicians had novice privileges for a while until the FCC rectified that to allow them to get on 2 meters. Eventually, technicians I found to be active in those days would upgrade, but they would stay on 6 meters because they really liked the activity of the VHF and above activities. VUCC, everyone knows their grid square today, and actually to say grid square, it's really a grid locator. Because it's not a square, it's a 2-degree by 1-degree field. But it started out as a grid square back in Germany in the 1950s. It was refined and became known as today what it was in 1980. There were 2 nearly identical proposals by SM5 AGM and G4 ANB, with European VHFers meeting in Maidenhead, England, adopting what we have today. In 1981, the Central States VHF Society offered a 100 grid square award for working 100 1-by-1 grids. 1983, John Lindholm, W1XX at the League at the time, announced the ERRL's awards program for VUCC. John is now the contest manager for CQ's Worldwide VHF Contest. In 1983, VHF enthusiasts began to switch in their contesting from giving out their section location to giving out their grid square or grid locator, but the grid square name has stuck. The latest claim to VUCC is between WA1ZMS and W4WWQ, being the principal operators in what is now 122 gigahertz VUCC. In 1960-61, the first satellite was built by amateur radio operators and tested and was readied for launch on December 12, 1961. For 22 days, the little 10-pound satellite transmitted the Morse code HI 10 times a minute on 145 megahertz. It was a 140 milliwatt transmitter. The signal was first picked up by KC4USB in the Bird Station Antarctica. Shortly after, it was picked up by KL7EBM in Kodiak, Alaska. And as the battery deteriorated, so did the HI character. It went down to gradually sputtering out a few dits. And then it died altogether on January 3rd, 1962, after 312 orbits, and burned up on January 31st in its reentry. Some far going back to EME, former CQ and QST magazine VHF columnist Sam Harris, W1FZJ, participated in the East Coast end of the first EME QSO between the Rhododendron Swamp VHF Society on W1VU and the IMAC Radio Club W6HB. and that was on 1296 megahertz and July 21st, 1960. DXing on 144-220 was given a giant boost when, in the 1950s, W6NLZ and KH6UK made contact between California and Hawaii. 1957 on 2 meters, and 2 years later, in 1959, they worked on 220 megahertz. Now, the unique thing about that QSO, it is the longest terrestrial distant QSO on 220 megahertz, and now the longest lasting DX record on VHF and above. KH6UK, his name is Tommy. He was also held the call sign of W2UK, and he was on one end of the first 2 meter meteor scatter contact between Paul Wilson and he, and that took place on October 22nd in 1953. Now, from my perspective as the editor of CQVHF magazine, I've seen the growing interest in VHF ham bands. No longer are we just interested in FM, space, or weak signal communication, or ATV communication. We are now interested in using the VHF ham bands in the following applications. Continuing in weak signal. Weak signal continues to be the prime interest for VHF plus ham band operators. Among the weak signal activities are the quite popular EME, meteor scatter, and various types of propagation using sporadic E, tropospheric ducting, and transequatorial aurora F2 propagation. With regard to EME and meteor scatter communications, digital software development, in particular WSJT, is being used for more sophisticated EME contacts and meteor scatter communication. Increasingly, digital is displacing SSB on meteor scatter and CW insofar as EME is concerned. Space communications, various satellites continue to be involved, such as LEO satellites, the unfortunate history of Phase 3D satellite, but the AO-51 is still active. There will be a Phase 3E and Eagle satellites coming up, as well as satellite proposed for launch around Mars, and that will be called Phase 6. Communicating with persons via ARIS continues to increase. This has proven to be one of the educational values, as well as experimental values. As ham radio activity continues to increase on board the ISS, the possibility for experiments will also increase in the coming years. FM communications continues to be the backbone for most who now enter the hobby, but also is most actively used for emergency communications. The Internet has also opened up VHF for insofar as digital communications, but also there is Echolink and IRLP that's being used. ATV continues to be used on VHF and above, but ATV is not only used terrestrially, but people are putting it on board balloons and being able to see what's going on back here from the balloon's perspective. Speaking of balloons, they are also being equipped with digital devices such as voice repeaters, as well as GPS receivers. Insofar as ATV is concerned, there's radio control. A couple of years ago now, a ham radio operator launched a 6-foot plane that flew across the Atlantic, and we had him write his article in the CQVHF magazine. Contesting in ham radio has been around for a very long time, but contesting now involves crazy things like trying to see how far you can make a Wi-Fi connection. Contesting is evolving because of EME and WSJT and how that is going to be viewed by the people who run the contests.
That was CQ Magazine VHF columnist and CQ VHF Magazine editor Joe Lynch, N6CL, taking a brief look at VHF then and now. He spoke at the 2005 Dayton Hamvention in suburban Dayton, Ohio. The Rain Report is copyright 1990 through 2006, Rain, all rights reserved. The Rain Report is not intended for transmission below 29.5 megahertz, other than by the Gateway 160-meter radio newsletter. For the Rain Report, I'm Blair Alper, KA9SEQ.